A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be with you once again, 2 days in a row. My goodness gracious, we've got a streak going on here, and hopefully that continues. All right, so, you know, we're going to talk today. Still, I think the big news is Joe Biden's pardoning of Hunter Biden. For not just being an unlawful user of drugs while possessing a firearm, not just lying on the Form 4473 when he purchased a revolver, but absolving him of any and all crimes committed over the past decade, a sweeping presidential pardon, one of the most sweeping ever, and again, directed at a family member after Joe Biden specifically said for months that he would not take this step. So, yeah, we've got a lot of think pieces out here about Biden's tarnished legacy and what this means for, Biden's future, how this empowers Trump, all of that. And listen, those are all, I guess, legitimate takes on Biden's pardon. But Jacob Sullum over at Reason had a great piece, very thoughtful piece that I want to talk about on today's show. He says that Biden's pardon features several shades of hypocrisy, including the gun policy implications. Joe Biden says his son did not deserve prison for violating firearm laws that the president vigorously defends and, in fact, has made more severe. Right. And that, I think, is, for me anyway, the primary issue. Hunter Biden was accused of and convicted of possessing a firearm at a time in which he was regularly using crack cocaine, right? But the federal law doesn't specify what unlawful drug cannot be used when somebody is purchasing or possessing a firearm. It is any quote-unquote unlawful drug, right? And that could implicate millions of Americans who are not abusing heroin or fentanyl. They're not smoking crack cocaine. They're using cannabis under the prescription of a doctor, right? Or they live in a state where marijuana has been legalized recreationally as well. And those folks still fall under the same provision that Hunter Biden was charged and convicted of. So in Sullum's piece, he talks about Joe Biden's excuse for offering Hunter Biden a sweeping pardon, again, claiming that this prosecution was politicized, that he had no objections to the original plea deal that would have spared Hunter Biden prison time. But when that plea deal fell apart, then, of course, it became politicized. It's a weird argument, I have to say. And as Sullum writes, it is possible, as the president suggests, that David Weiss, the special prosecutor, took to heart the criticism of the initial plea deal and was determined to show that he was not giving Hunter Biden special treatment. At the same time, Sullum writes, the ultimate decision to throw the book at Biden was not at all unusual. In the rare cases where federal defendants insist on a trial, they can be expected to be punished for that decision. That is undeniably a problem, but it is by no means a problem that is unique to Hunter Biden. Sullum goes on to say the same is true of another problem to which the president alludes, the haphazard, wildly uneven enforcement of the gun laws that Hunter Biden violated. Survey data suggests that millions of American gun owners are illegal drug users, meaning that they are guilty of the same felony that Hunter Biden committed by possessing a firearm. If they bought their firearms from a federally licensed dealer and therefore, quote, filled out a gun form, they are also guilty of the two additional felonies that Hunter Biden committed during the same transaction by denying his drug use. Now, Sullum says almost none of these potential defendants ever face prosecution. From fiscal year 2008 through fiscal year 2017, for example, federal prosecutors filed an annual average of just 133 charges under Section 922G3. Now, 133 it is what it is, right? It's not nothing. Joe Biden suggested that Hunter Biden was virtually the only person who's ever faced charges for being an unlawful user of drugs in possession of a firearm, and that is not the case. As Jacob Sullum points out, every year there are dozens of cases, more than 100 cases, that are brought by U.S. attorneys around the country. Now, again, that number pales in comparison to, you know, the felon possession charges that are brought by U.S. attorneys, but it, again, it's to me, a somewhat significant number, particularly when, as Sullivan points out, one of the reasons why these cases are rarely prosecuted is that the government generally does not know which drug users are gun owners or vice versa, right? It's difficult to charge somebody if you don't know that they're a drug user and a gun owner at the same time. But Hunter Biden publicly admitted his drug use, and his acquisition of the revolver came to light as a result of a bizarre spat with his girlfriend. And in that respect, he was very unlucky. Sullivan then says, so was Patrick Darnell Daniels Jr., a Mississippi man who had two guns and the remains of a few joints in his car when he was stopped for a traffic violation in 2022. Daniels was convicted of violating Section 922G3 and sentenced to nearly 4 years in prison. Last year, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit overturned that conviction, deeming the prosecution inconsistent with Daniels' constitutional right to keep and bear arms. Now, the DOJ has fought that decision. They have fought to keep this law in place and enforced against individuals, not just like Hunter Biden, but like Patrick Darnell Daniels. And in fact, defending the gun charges, because Hunter Biden's attorneys did raise a Second Amendment argument, at least to some degree, in their initial filings. It was not really the subject of their defense. Judge Mary Ellen Noriega said they could use that on appeal, but not during the trial itself. But David Wise had argued that the Second Amendment, like the rest of the Constitution, quote, protects against invasions of individual rights. It is not a suicide pact. And he added that Congress's legislative choice to prohibit individuals who are actively engaged in habitual, illegal, or compulsive narcotic use from possessing firearms falls firmly within longstanding historical traditions and accords with the Second Amendment. As Sullivan says, Biden sided with Weiss in this constitutional dispute, which pitted the president against his own son. The Biden administration has stubbornly defended Section 922G3 in one case after another, specifically arguing that cannabis users are so untrustworthy and dangerous that the government is justified in threatening them with prison if they dare to exercise their Second Amendment rights. And again, that's exactly the case, right? The Biden administration is taking the position that any illegal drug users, it doesn't matter what drug it is, any illegal drug user, in fact, all illegal drug users as a class are dangerous people who have no Second Amendment rights. That's the position that they have taken. And again, it applies not just to people like Hunter Biden, people like Patrick Darnell Daniels, any individual that, they could prove is a unlawful user of drugs. Now, that might mean somebody who possesses a medical marijuana card and a concealed carry license. In fact, there is a case being brought right now, I believe by the Second Amendment Foundation and the Firearms Policy Coalition. The plaintiff is a district attorney in Pennsylvania who has a medical marijuana card and would like to be able to legally possess a firearm, but he is unable to do so because of Section 922G3. So this is the position that DOJ has taken. And as Sullivan says, President Biden not only supports that policy, he evidently thought that the penalties that his son faced for violating that statute were not severe enough. The Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, which Biden signed in June of 2022, increased the maximum sentence for violating Section 922G3 from 10 to 15 years. It also created yet another possible charge for drug users who obtain firearms, likewise punishable by up to 15 years in prison. If Hunter Biden had bought his revolver after the law took effect and was still using crack, he could have faced 4 felony charges with a combined maximum penalty of 45 years. Now, keep in mind, we're talking about a nonviolent possessory offense. Even if you think that this should be a criminal offense, we're not talking about somebody who committed an armed robbery, committed a home invasion, committed a homicide, right? Possessing a firearm, maybe while they're smoking crack, maybe while they're using cannabis under a doctor's supervision. Either way, 45 years in prison seems like an awful lot. Now, again, that was the maximum that Hunter Biden could have received if he had been charged after the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act had taken effect. Right. So there are all kinds of ifs and whatnots. But he probably would not have been sentenced to the maximum. Even Patrick Darnell Daniels wasn't sentenced to the maximum, even though he got, again, almost 4 years in prison. I think it was actually almost 5 years in prison. Now, Solem says Joe Biden nevertheless argues that his son did not deserve a prison sentence for illegally obtaining a firearm. Those severe penalties, he implies, are meant for other defendants, people who actually pose a threat to public safety. That position, Solem says, seems inconsistent with the Biden administration's insistence that every cannabis consumer, including patients who use marijuana as a medicine with state approval, is a public menace. Solem concludes by saying that in any case, Daniels got almost 4 years based on nothing more than his status as a gun-owning cannabis consumer. While Hunter Biden is a well-connected man who could afford top-of-the-line legal representation, Daniels is a man of much more modest means, with decidedly less political influence. The contrast between their cases is not a good look for a president who periodically decries the unjust and unequal impact of marijuana prohibition. Well, I'll be honest, I don't think Joe Biden really cares about appearances at this point. I mean, he had to have known what the response would be when he issued this sweeping pardon for Hunter Biden, absolving him not only of his crime of possessing a firearm as an unlawful user of drugs and lying about it on the Form 4473, but any criminal activity that took place over the past 10 years. I don't think Joe Biden really cares how this looks. For Hunter Biden, for himself, for his legacy, I don't think it really matters. But if it did, and if Joe Biden wanted to maybe show that this was not just about special treatment for Hunter Biden, he could issue a pardon to Patrick Darnell Daniels and any other defendant who is either in prison or waiting sentencing, merely violating Section 922G3, possessing a firearm as a, quote, unlawful user of drugs. If Biden doesn't want to take that step, he could at least issue pardons to those defendants, like Mr. Daniels, who were convicted for nothing more than possessing a firearm while using marijuana, a drug that is in the process of being rescheduled from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3, which means it'll be available and legal under a doctor's prescription federally. Now, again, more than half the country has already passed medical marijuana laws, so in those states, a doctor can prescribe you, can get a medical marijuana card, you can use it without fear of state prosecution, but again, technically, you can't own a gun because you're violating federal law. Now, Jacob Solem says U.S. attorneys bring, on average, about 133 of these cases to trial, or at least to court, every year. So, there aren't a lot of defendants who would meet that bar to be pardoned similarly by Joe Biden as Hunter Biden was, but it's not an insignificant number. Now, will Joe Biden take that step to show that Hunter Biden wasn't just being singled out for special treatment? I doubt it, because I think at the end of the day, Hunter Biden was singled out for special treatment by his dad. And just as Joe Biden, I don't think really gives a damn about how this looks. I'll be honest, and I hope I'm proven wrong, but I don't really think Joe Biden gives a damn about Patrick Darnell Daniels or anybody else sitting in prison for the same crime that his son Hunter committed. Again, love to be proven wrong, but I'm not holding my breath waiting for any additional pardons to come down. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Illinois. Here's the headline. Chainsaw-wielding man who attacked St. Charles Senior Home wasn't locked up despite criminal history. I confess, I missed the initial story about the chainsaw-wielding man who targeted a senior home in St. Charles, Illinois. His name was Daniel Escalera. And as Eyewitness News 7 in Chicago reports, the 41-year-old had apparently been cutting some trees outside an assisted living facility on Sunday morning when he then walked in the front door of this facility, shirtless, wearing or carrying his chainsaw, threatening the residents there. Eyewitness News 7 says even when police hit him with a taser, Escalera kept threatening residents with a chainsaw until police shot and killed him. Neighbor Tom Lapis said it scares us, but I'm sure it's a one-time incident. We hope and we pray that that's the situation because we love the community, St. Charles, downtown St. Charles is wonderful. I mean, given the rarity in which we hear about chainsaw-wielding individuals going after senior care centers, I'm guessing this probably is a one-off. At least, hopefully, it's not the start of a trend. But as Eyewitness News 7 reports, there were opportunities to keep Escalera behind bars. His criminal record spans almost 25 years, includes numerous arrests for driving under the influence of drugs and alcohol, a habitual DUI traffic violator, resisting law enforcement, cocaine and methamphetamine possession, public intoxication and endangerment, domestic battery. He was actually accused of stabbing his then-wife. The SWAT team had to be called in. He was living in Indiana at the time. And in 2022, Escalera was involved in a road rage incident in which he beat a motorcyclist with his own helmet. Eyewitness News 7 says that Escalera was convicted and jailed in that incident, and it appears that he was supposed to be in jail on Sunday for violating probation in one of the many other cases against him. They're still trying to determine, they say, why he was not locked up, but they say the decision allowed him to be on the loose with a chainsaw, threatening residents and dead on the ground in a fatal confrontation with police. Now, part of the problem may be that Escalera was in Illinois at the time, and a lot of these charges came from Indiana. Channel 7 in Chicago said they tried contacting several prosecutors' offices in Indiana to ask why Escalera wasn't held in custody for offenses that were clear violations of his probation, but has not heard back from those prosecutors. And again, we don't know the timing of this, right? It could be that Escalera had left the state, and in which case it's very difficult for prosecutors in Indiana to bring him back for a probation violation. That just rarely happens. If, however, there was an opportunity to put Escalera behind bars while he was in Indiana for the crimes that he committed in Indiana, then that is an open question. And it sounds like that may have been the case anyway regarding that road rage incident. Better question is, if Escalera beat a man with his own motorcycle helmet basically 2 years ago, why was he out on probation anyway? Why wasn't he still behind bars for that crime? That's a serious, violent offense that didn't result in much, if any, time behind bars. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story from Northern California, where a burglary suspect shot by a homeowner and then led police on a miles-long, almost an hour-long pursuit in Sacramento. Happened about 3 o'clock Friday afternoon, according to the Sacramento County Sheriff's Office. Would-be burglar showed up at the house and began trying to break windows to get inside. The homeowner was in the home at the time with his family. He yelled at the intruder several times to stop, according to the sheriff's department, but the intruder refused and continued trying to smash windows. The Sacramento County Sheriff's Office says the homeowner, fearing for his safety and that of his family, shot at the suspect from inside the residence, striking him in the hand. That's when the suspect stopped trying to break into that house and then ran next door where no one was home, managed to get inside there. He then found the keys to a car that was parked in the garage, drove it through the closed garage door. And deputies caught up with the just stolen car, tried to pull it over, and that led again to a pursuit that lasted for about an hour before deputies used a pit maneuver to bring the car to a halt. The suspect, 40-year-old Emilio Correa, then taken into custody, treated for his injuries at a local hospital before being booked into jail on suspicion of burglary, auto theft, vandalism, and evading police. The homeowner, again, acting in fear for his safety and the safety of his family, not facing any charges for firing those shots and hitting the would-be intruder. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a deputy in Colorado who saved an elderly man from what could have been a fatal propane leak in his home. This was just a couple of days ago, November the 30th. A 911 dispatcher got a call, and on the other end, there was just a guy moaning into the phone, not even able to form complete words at that point. It would have been easy, I guess, to dismiss that as a prank call, but instead, Deputy Colton Sheridan went to the home of the 911 caller. When he got there, he could hear the moaning from inside. He could also smell propane from outside the house. He said he entered the home, found an elderly man on the floor, unable to speak, unable to move at that point. So Sheridan opened windows and doors, both sides of the house, creating an airflow so that the breeze could get through and the propane could be dispersed. Sheriff's office said he found the source of the propane, shut it off before he could be injured, before the elderly man was affected anymore. Sheriff's office in Teller County, Colorado said in doing so, he eliminated the risk to the elderly man himself and the additional arriving first responders. Deputy Sheridan's proximity, quick thinking, and decisive actions at great risk to himself were all factors in saving the life of one of our fellow Teller County residents. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to save a man from what could have been, again, a fatal propane leak. Colton Sheridan, deputy in Teller County, Colorado, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program. As always, I am happy to report I do not have a TMI update for Missy. Everything is copacetic. We had a brief trip to the hospital yesterday, but it was just sort of a one-off. So she is recuperating and recovering. I have put her on strict bed rest while she is dealing with the pneumonia. And hopefully we'll have more news and more good news to report here in the days ahead. But again, certainly do appreciate your thoughts and your prayers. Please keep them coming. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Until then, well, I need to hit the music, I suppose. Be well, be safe, and be free.